Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. You do teach the Supreme Court. You know about the Supreme Court. We have just seen a question that has come will come before the court as to whether President Obama overstepped his authority and did something which was to create an immigration program which ordinarily one might have thought should have had to come from Congress, but he did by executive fiat.
Right. So we're actually not quite sure if that's going to go before the court. We can presume that it will. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Obama's immigration plan. And you're right. They did it based on separation of powers arguments, saying that this is clearly a deviation from the intentions of Congress. And it's doing so in a way that is going to create a substantial financial burden to state governments. So that certainly sets up a rather interesting case before the Supreme Court, should they decide to take it. I think in some ways the good news for the administration is that this decision was released as, say, early in its term as it has been, which means that they may well be able to hear this before this term is out.
Okay, so interesting, schminteresting. My question for you is this. Are the Republicans right? Did he exceed his constitutional authority?
I think there's a strong argument that he did. There are two sides to this, right? There's one that very clearly Obama said that he can't get immigration reform through Congress, so he was going to act through executive orders. And at some level, this is about the allocation of resources, which is a part of executive discretion, right? So in other words, in order to carry out any type of law, there have to be choices about, you know, where you're going to put your priorities, where you're going to make difficult choices about what the priorities are within any given law. And in some ways, this is a reflection of that, right? That you cannot combat illegal immigration in all of its individual forms, right? It's too large a problem. It's too big. And so what Obama has said and what the administration has attempted to do in its justification here is to say that this is about resource allocation. What we want to ensure that we're doing is that we are sending those that have violated U.S. laws home first and to do it expeditiously. And for those that have been here for a very long time, that have families here, that are parts of communities, that's not the administration's priority, right?
That's,
so they're making
a
resource allocation argument. But that being said, this is clearly a change in policy. Right. I mean, yes, you can make it an argument about resource allocation, but, you could just look at the reaction of Congress. I mean, this Congress was not saying, well, yeah, that's kind of what we meant. They were basically saying, look, this is a deviation. And in some ways, even on the left, Democrats were kind of applauding the policy change. So it does appear as if there's a real tension here. And the question then for the court is about how much discretion does the executive actually have?
Sure. This won't be the first time we've seen this.
No, not at all. Not at all. This is part of a long line of cases about executive discretion. And it also cuts in kind of interesting ways, right? So one of the reasons why George W. Bush picked John Roberts was because he was a supporter of executive authority, including executive discretion, right? Because you can think about the issue that was.
And also because he was young and would be on the court for the next 1,000 years.
True. But if thinking about the issues that mattered to the Bush administration, they were very much tied up to issues of the war on terrorism and having the executive be able to do the things it thought necessary to combat the war on terror.
So do you think So do you think John Roberts might rule based on what you've just said in favor of the president's discretion here to administratively impose this immigration reform?
I think it raises rather interesting questions for his jurisprudence, right? That in other words, he's going to have to do quite a tap dance away from some of the things that he's done in the past in order to reach a decision that is skeptical of the Obama administration. Look, Chief Justice Roberts is a very sophisticated jurist, and I'm sure he can make that dance. But at the same time, sometimes the lines that we draw left and right don't work out quite as well once we're in the kind of the mire of jurisprudential questions. And I think this might be one of those issues. It's a bit sticky.
We have so much more that I want to talk to you about. So I'm gonna go away from the court here, and then ask you about Bernie Sanders' chances. What do you think? You think that a guy who was once perceived as having an outside shot no longer has that shot?
Well, I guess, I mean, if I were to start with kind of strengths of Bernie Sanders, I mean, there really are some notable things, right? I mean, one, we can start with things that, you know, he's really popular among activists. If you look at, you know, polling numbers for, you know, his favorability ratings, yes, he has favorable ratings, but his unfavorables are not there. In other words, he is more liked than disliked, which is actually pretty rare in this particular election. Of note, his fundraising has been really, really interesting in the sense that I think about 80% of his donations have come from small donors, so under $200, and he has raised the second most of anybody running, you know, with Democrat or Republican. It's really, really notable. And then I guess
the polls don't show it.
The polls, right. The polls sort of show it. I think that's what I would say, in the sense that he does have some popularity. It's just that Hillary Clinton is unbelievably popular among Democratic voters. And so, you know, he is well behind her. But that being said, one last kind of advantage that he has in this is that, you know, as you know, the New Hampshire primary, it's second in the calendar, right? And that's his best chance of winning an early primary. And if he wins there, then, you know, it kind of can change the frame a little bit. And moving forward, he might be able to build off of that and gain some momentum in some different states. That being said, you know, the pathway to victory for Bernie Sanders doesn't seem to be there to me. You know, look, first off, if you look at the political science literature on kind of predictors of who wins the nomination, you know, the number one thing that we look for are endorsements, right? And for endorsements, you know, Clinton has a massive lead. I mean, she just gets almost all of the endorsements, particularly if we're looking for office holders, for members of the House, the Senate, and governors across the country. I mean, she just has a wide, huge lead in that regard. But I think also Clinton, and this is much more powerful than what you might expect, that Clinton is the candidate people expect to win. And this has yep. major influences, because people will talk sometime about, okay, who do you want to win? Right? And people might say, well, Bernie Sanders. I love his message. But then if you ask them, who do you expect to win? It's Hillary Clinton. And what we've found is that it's that who do you expect to win that has greater predictive power about who actually wins.
Now, that didn't help with Obama, did it, when she was running against Obama and lost to him?
You mean
the expectation that she would win?
Yeah, it depends when you ask. You know, so if you track that over time, it does get there. Early on, there was a lot of noise there. But even there, it wasn't as her expectation lead wasn't that large. And you know, there's always a danger in talking about these things as early as we do.
Sure.
But nevertheless, right, the size of that expectation lead is really startling.
Thanks, Brad Hayes. We'll talk some more the next time.
Thanks, Alan.